I mean, if anything, I think that Babylon's the weakest part of the movie. I mean, not the final scene. I think that's, you know, I think that's well done, you know, yeah. Especially how Nevada comes and saves them. Just the concept of Babylon. It's like these pacifists are somehow, where they, I mean, they say that they're growing their own food, but I don't know if that the inside of that place could technically support the amount of people that seem to be there. And then secondly, the fact is, if they ever had to venture outside of it, how were they surviving? Like, I mean,
yeah, they had no guns. They had what, cool necklaces?
Yeah, that had peace symbols. Oh. And I mean, and it I mean, the only thing that's funny about it is it's like the perfect representation of like, well, actually modern life. It's like you got these clueless woke individuals who are like, you know, the world is okay except for all these microaggressions. And it's like, dude, there is literally people dying out here. What the fuck are you talking about? Microaggressions? Like, there's still people starving and dying in other countries from disease. You realize this is a thing, right? No, you called me a bad name. That's it's like, fuck you. You're an idiot.
It's like the Kardashians. I mean, Kim, there are people literally dying.
I mean, you know, or it's, I mean, so it's a good representation of that. I don't know if that's what they were getting at. And it's funny that it takes the older, it's actually an interesting conversation about generations too, because everybody in Babylon's younger.
Yes.
And like, it's the Gen X millennials, you know, that, you know, Tallahassee and all them that come in there that actually end up saving them because they don't know how to function whenever it comes to actual, like, real drama, you survival. Know, real, yeah, real survival.
I don't know how you would even explain. It is kind of a plot hole, because how do you explain them surviving this long? Where are they getting their food?
Build it? How did they survive the initial, like, I mean, because when they were building that, it would have drawn in zombies.
Oh,
how
yeah.
I mean, you know, so somebody there had to have at least shot down or killed the first few zombies until they got that wall built.
Yeah, I don't.
Which is a whole other conversation about walls and if they work or not, about keeping unwanted people out.
That is true. And they don't have any guns to stop them.
That's true too. I mean, but to me, that's the biggest, like you were saying, like the biggest plot hole of the movie is Babylon. Like,
yeah.
And I don't like anybody in Babylon. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Like, it's when they get there, it's like, I mean, even like Little Rock, who is way smarter than all of them, she just falls in with them. It's like, okay, I'm going to forget the world is the way it is. It's like, there's no way the way that you've survived and the fact that you were running cons on people as a 12-year-old before the zombie apocalypse that you would be cool with this.
Well, she wanted to try something different, and I can respect that. She's trying to do things on her own, and if anything, she's going to be one of those teenagers or women in general that's like, you know what, I've committed to this and it's wrong, but I'm gonna make it work. You know, like, I know this isn't right, but you know, I've already come this far, so I just need to fucking commit to the bit. But okay. She didn't commit to it completely, because who had the gun at the end of the movie?
Yeah, she kept the pistol that from the king that Elvis gave Nixon. So yes.
Yes. So also, can we just talk real quick about how Woody Harrelson plays a killer Elvis?
That's actually in the trivia. Did you know that's how he got his acting career?
Oh my God. Okay,
that story that he told Nevada about how he did this spot on Elvis impersonation, mm-hmm. and got the prettiest girl in school to like him. That was his real story about him.
Shit.
That was him as a child. That's what he actually did.
That's fucking awesome.
And actually the song at the end of it, which should be your outro, the hunk a hunk or whatever,
is that
Elvis
him?
Song, that was him singing.
I knew it. I fucking knew it. I didn't even check. I'm so glad I didn't even check it, because I was like, okay, well, the only other, shockingly, the only other version I've heard of, and you're probably going to slap me through the microphone over this, but the other version I've heard of Hunka Hunka Burning Love, that I was like, well, this is pretty good, but it was actually a woman, and it was one of the Judds. It was Wynonna Judd. She sang it for Lilo and Stitch, and she actually did a pretty decent job.
Okay. I'm not going to slap you over that. The Judds are from this, actually very close to my neck of the woods. And so there's a lot of respect for the Judds around here.
Yeah, you're like, I'll allow
it. They grew up as poor as we did, and they made a life out of it. So
yeah, so she did her voice really well. So I'm like, okay, that's not the King, but that sounds like the King. I was like, is that fucking Woody Harrelson?
It was exactly him. So all that stuff in there about how and the voice that he uses, that's really him.
Like, oh, I knew
he
that.
Really,
yeah.
Yeah, that was. I mean, but I'm just saying, like, he's that big of an Elvis fan.
Wow, I fucking love it. I wonder if he's the reason why they had Graceland in it.
He probably. And now they actually. This is in the trivia too. All the primaries actually had production rights in this movie,
nice.
Meaning that they got to call shots on things.
Oh.
So in the scene in particular where Madison's vomiting up the trail mix, Woody Harrelson called his producer credit and said, "Listen, there's not enough chunks in that. I want that vomit to look chunkier when she vomits." And they bumped it up because that was his call. He wanted it to. So all of the main leads now, they have a say so in how the movie plays out, which is awesome. Actually,
I would say that worked out really good for this film.
It really did.
I went, okay, who put in Elvis's actual shoes? That shit was funny. Why are you wearing Elvis's actual shoes?
Comfort.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Tallahassee gets so mad because they fit Columbus perfectly. Like, it was like, these shoes were, like, made for me. Like, these just are perfectly my size. anything else you want to say about the story? I mean, like, I think we've talked about the weakest points of it and the points that people have issue, which I don't think are the weakest. I mean, Albuquerque it's a horror comedy, and yes, it goes way more into comedy at that scene, but then it turns on the horror with the T-800s right after, so it's not like it steers too far off into cartoon land at that point.
What I want to say about the story is that this could have been same shit, different day, and it really wasn't. I think they did a good job of making this a different story on a different day.
Yeah, if you go with the concept it was going to be a TV series, this is definitely like, you know, another, like, maybe even season, you know, like if they would have branched it out, like they could have had more on the road stuff between them as they were trying to find Little Rock, and then more stuff, whether or not I would like it or not, they could have fleshed out Babylon and made it a little bit less plot holy if they, you know, had more time with it. But yeah, it's different in the sense that they're now seeing other groups and other survivors and having to interact with them, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Now it goes more into the horror route if they do this, but some of those other survival groups are not going to be nice people.
Oh yeah. I was just thinking that. I was like, God, every group they've run into for the most part has been nice. I mean, aside from Albuquerque and Flagstaff. I mean, but even they were, like, not bad. They were just
They just didn't like them because they, you know, they reminded them too much of themselves.
They hate and us because
the
they ain't
themselves. They hate us because they ain't us, yeah.
But I also think that, you know, in terms of not so much same shit, different day and episodes of, you know, making this a series. You know what you don't get in Walking Dead? You don't get zombies that have leveled up.
No, you don't. And that's a fun aspect, too, that they've added to it. I mean, making it like we talked about the first movie was kind of based upon Left 4 Dead a little bit. Making it to where there are different types of zombies and you have to be worried about, is that just a regular, everyday zombie? Is that a homer, which is actually a level below a zombie because it doesn't even know any, it doesn't even care if it eats you or not. Or is that, you know, T-800, which is like the ultimate zombie. Like, I mean, you know, that's, it's a neat twist to keep it interesting.
Yeah.
The thing that The Walking Dead gets right is the human element more than anything else. Cause I was rewatching it whenever it was, like I said, whenever it was just playing that Walking Dead channel where it was playing, and it got back to it looped back around and it was playing the stuff whenever they got to the Herschel's house and the farmhouse.
Yeah.
And Herschel leaves because he doesn't Herschel at that point's one, you know, he's just went from the fact that he thinks he can still cure the zombies to seeing the, like, all the zombies in the barn like wasted and coming to the grips. It's like, yeah, they are gone. There's no helping them. So he goes to like a bar in town to drink his blues away, which is, I mean, he's not had a drink in forever because he's like a recovering alcoholic. So that's a big thing. And So they go after him. But he also is naive enough not to believe that there's bad people out there. And that's whenever Rick and let's see, I want to say it's Glenn, it's Rick, Glenn, I think, and Herschel, because Glenn goes there to try to convince Herschel to come back for Maggie because he's in love with her. Aww. And they meet, and that while they're in the bar, those guys come in from the, and they're clearly from up north, and they've got like the northern accents. Like one of them sounds like, I don't know, it's not like Bostonian, but it's like one of those accents. And it's like, and you can already tell there's a friction there, and you can already tell the way that they're talking that they have some kind of agenda.
Yeah.
It's like, where are you guys from? How are you guys surviving? And it's like, fuck.
Yeah. This.
So that's the one good thing that, I'm interested to see if they go, I know it steers too much away from comedy, but there's ways that you could do that. And still make the movie, you know, function as a comedy, but they need to work some of that in, I feel like, in Zombieland, just a little bit.
Yeah. They definitely need to have some bad people, for sure.
Yeah, there has to be somebody bad that's not just like, you know, the zombies. I mean, like, you know, that because we've got a good mix of, like, the heroes now, like the good people. It'd be interesting to see the bad that are still around.
Yeah.
Acting-wise, all of the principals are perfectly fine. I think, you know, they're great, actually. Rosario Dawson's a great character. Madison might be a little bit one-note playing the airhead, but she plays it to a T, so I can't fault her for that. And her accent is cringy, but at the same time, it's perfect for what she needs to be. The only character I feel like suffers in this movie, and I'm not saying Berkeley because he plays the annoying character he's supposed to, is really Little Rock, because they don't give her anything to do for most of the movie. Everybody else is perfectly fine. I mean, you know, for what they have to do.
Yeah. The only character, Rosario Dawson, was kind of a weird addition. She served a purpose, you know, and we've already talked about Abigail, but like for a minute, I was definitely questioning Rosario Dawson's existence in this movie.
Like whether she should be there or yes. not.
Now she does come through literally, in the end. For a while I was like, why do we even have her in here? This doesn't make any sense. But then at the end I ended up liking her.
Yeah. And I think that's, I'm looking at it from the end of the movie. You're right. When she's first introduced, it's like, okay, female Tallahassee, got it. So
yeah, exactly. You know,
that's what she is at that point.
And going back to actors, were you kind of sad when Albuquerque and Flagstaff died?
I don't know about Albuquerque because, like, I mean, the thing about him is he's supposed to, you know, be that character that pisses you off just a little bit because of how aggressive he is. But I was a little sad about Flagstaff because him and Columbus get along so well, and seeing them interact and then seeing Wichita off to the side, and she's just like either shaking her head or she's almost mad that they're, you know, It's like, seriously, there's two of them now. Like, what the fuck?
I can't handle more than one of you. I was a little sad when they left because I was like, how is this going to go? This could be a good survival group, you know? Clearly, that did not work out. And did it, I mean, oh my God, this was so funny. When Albuquerque was dying or they're getting ready to shoot him, and he's like, he was literally bit three times. And then you notice that Flagstaff is starting to change.
Yeah, he was already sweaty at that point. It's like, oh, shit. You know?
Oh, that was so funny because it was like, you took your man down.
It's also, now I can see this as being a reason people don't like that scene. If you want to go the route of saying that there's no real, like, threat to the characters, although I felt like they did a good job of making them feel threatened in Babylon, especially the scene where they don't have any guns and they're kind of standing there on that grandstand and they've got the weapons and they're just surrounded because they think that they've taken out the biggest portion of them. And, like, now they realize they maybe took out maybe, you know, a tenth of the number and they're basically done before Nevada shows up. Some people could argue that Albuquerque and Flagstaff represent a, you know, a threat to Tallahassee and Columbus without actually being a threat to the two of them, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like, let's show them getting attacked and bitten without actually showing them getting bitten. And then that way we can keep our heroes, but have the, you know, the sense of them being, you know, kind of threatened. And I guess I would agree with that to a certain extent if you want to make that comment. But again, you know, they, to me, I mean, you know, that scene's not that pivotal that I would put that much critique into that, you know?
Yeah, I feel like there was a few scenes like that in here that it's obviously people did critique them a little too much. But yeah. I don't know. I think that's the problem is when you start taking comedies too serious.
Yeah, and I don't know if this was a direct reference to Shaun of the Dead, but the fact that Columbus on top of the RV calling out, you know,
Oh, yes!
It's pretty good connection back to Shaun of the Dead.
That's what I was thinking. You know, also, well, this was a direct reference. This wasn't even like, oh, could that have been? He had the fucking Walking Dead comics.
Yes, he was reading it, and that's actually in the trivia. The there's the storyline that he was reading at that point in time might have some reference to something in the currently was in the movie or whatever at that moment in time. So
I forgot which one he was reading too. I don't know if it was the third one or whatnot, but
it was kind of funny though. He's like, "This is terrifying,"
and not even remotely accurate.
Yeah, but yeah, that was pretty funny that they threw that in there. It's one of those movies. It's like a feel good zombie movie. And it's like, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have one of those. I mean, no. Especially in the wake of The Walking Dead, which is all gloom and doom throughout the entire series.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't hurt to have a fun one pop up. And I mean, if they're going to do them every 10 years, they're not even like smacking you over the head with it. It's one of the things I'm both kind of disappointed but also happy with the decision. If they are just going to do that every 10 years, it's enough time for you to say, you know, I miss those guys. We're and then another movie comes out and you're like, here we go, let's watch this.
Oh hell yeah,
you know?
They're back.
Yeah. Which is how I felt about this movie when it came to theaters. Like, I'm watching this. I want to see them again, you know. The music's just as good as the first movie.
Yeah, very appropriate music.
Getting Master of Puppets back instead of the beginning of For Whom the Bell Tolls from the first movie, pretty smart. And that whole scene where they're taking back the White House was pretty well done. I especially like the Wichita in particular, having the grenade launcher at the bottom of her. That gun was amazing that she had with a big C mag on it or whatever and all those 100 rounds. But the fact that it actually had the grenade launcher at the bottom that she was blasting zombies with.
Yeah.
Super cool. Like, kudos to them for going all out on the weaponry in that scene.
Other than CGI, do we have any trivia on how the White House looked like it did?
I don't know that they included anything about that. You know,
I mean, obviously the inside was just a set. There's no way they were recording in there. But
oh no, yeah, that's all set dressing and all that.
But I think they did a pretty damn good job.
Hilarious that Tallahassee uses Taft's, the largest president, uses his painting as like wrapping paper. I thought that was he's like, there's way more back there. He was our fattest president back there. That's what he says in the movie.
I remember that. Yeah. He's like, if you need wrapping paper or whatnot.
And then the scene, because I'm just throwing it out there, I love that scene with Madison where she reveals the ring, and she's like, this must have belonged to the first lady. And then, like, Wichita's like, yes, it did belong to the first lady. You know, there's a lot of, you know, meaning behind what she says.
Oh, yeah. Scene. It was literally the Hope Diamond, and, like, that could be a good weapon if you're punching.
Well, isn't that – see, now, they don't mention this, but isn't the Hope Diamond supposed to be cursed?
Ooh, I think so.
So it's interesting that he presents the Hope Diamond to her, and that's the reason that they break up is because of the supposed curse that's placed upon that gem. So,
you know what's funny is I've seen the Hope Diamond before. I actually saw it in Washington, D.C. And it was in this case that depending on who was looking at it or what was going on, it followed you. So where it turned was depending on if there was multiple people around or if it was just one person. And wherever I kind of went, it's like it was following you. It was cool. I didn't think creepy at the time, but now you tell me it has a curse.
Yeah, it says there is a curse supposedly upon the Hope Diamond. It's a curse that supposedly is for bad luck and death to not only for the owner, but for all who touched it. So it is interesting that right after he presents it to her, she leaves him. So yeah. I mean,
what was the curse of the Hope Diamond? The man that found the Hope Diamond was said to be torn apart by wild dogs after stealing the diamond. Wow. From there, its next owners faced injury, death, or debt. I guess America owns the Hope Diamond.
Yeah, yeah. we should probably give that to Ukraine at this point. You want to say some or go over some trivia?
Yes, let's do trivia.
The story, again, that Tallahassee tells in the hotel about his Elvis impersonation is exactly Woody Harrelson's story about how he got into acting. So, about how the little kid doing the Elvis impersonation. Yeah, so
that's fucking cool wild. On him.
And he does sing Burning Love. That is him. Jesse Eisenberg said that it was very difficult to keep a straight face while filming any of the scenes he had with Zoe Deutsch.
That's fucking awesome.
I think I'd been in the same boat. Like I get it for the people that think she's like cringe, but she cracks me up with how dumb she is. And she's so bubbly that she's like the antithesis of Wichita. Like Wichita's like, you know, she's super hot, but like, she's also like, you know, one of those that's like, you know, not only just grounded, but like almost a little too like, you know, negative, cynical. And then like Zoe's like that, like everything's going to be fine. Like what's wrong with you? You know, yeah. That sort of thing.
Very bright and bubbly. Well, you know,
and their color schemes are completely opposite. One wears all black, one wears all pink. I mean, exactly. It's, you know,
why can't I think of her name right now? The bubbly one,
Zoe or Madison?
Madison. Where does she get all her fucking luggage and everything? She's got all kinds of Louis Vuitton. The mall. I forgot. She lived in the mall.
Yeah, she lives in the mall. And that whole scene where he does at least hold, he does abide by Columbus's rules, even if he doesn't agree with them. But because that scene, Tallahassee's like, yeah, I'll totally put your luggage in. And just closes the minivan. And then it says travel light. Yes. You know, I'm like, okay, he's following the rules.
That's so funny.
Director Ruben Fleischer said that he was inspired to make Zombieland the original after seeing Shaun of the Dead. The scene in Zombieland Double Tap where Columbus and, oh, here's another reference to Shaun of the Dead, where Columbus and Tallahassee meet their counterparts, Albuquerque and Flagstaff, might have been inspired by the scene in Shaun of the Dead where Shaun's group meets Yvonne's group and they're like, you know, basically the exact copies of each other.
May have. No, they definitely got that from Shaun of the Dead.
The scene in which Columbus stands on top of the RV directing them, directing Tallahassee and Wichita, which direction to shoot the zombies is actually came from the final draft, final battle in the early draft of the original Zombieland, which involved Columbus and Tallahassee doing the same thing at an abandoned gas station.
Okay.
So they were actually going to have that scene in the original movie. But they moved everything to Pacific Playland and then they didn't go that route. Ryan Reynolds was considered for the role of Albuquerque, but turned it down due to scheduling conflicts. That might have been interesting because he could have pulled off the snarky really well, but also been charismatic enough that it would have been like, it would have been interesting to see how he played off of Woody in that scene.
Yeah, I think that could have worked. You know what else would have worked? Oh, God, why can't I think of his name right now?
They could still have Ryan Reynolds the next time they make these movies, by the way. Like, if they want to bring him back for another character in the third one, if he agreed to the second one, he might be down for the third one whenever they make it, finally.
They could also bring in Matthew McConaughey. Just saying.
I think they probably will.
Yeah.
But what were you going to say about Ryan Reynolds or anything
about
that? No, that
was it. That? They could have used Matthew McConaughey.
The song Master of Puppets plays during the opening credits of the first movie, or actually this movie. Not only does this mirror the first movie, which has For Whom the Bell Tolls, but the creators had originally tried to get it, as we said in the last episode. They just couldn't afford it. But that Ruben Fleischer, the very first thing when they greenlit this movie, said, take part of our money and buy the rights to Master of Puppets before we do anything else. Buy that, you know. So good on him for getting his his song finally.
Yeah.
When Tallahassee prepares to depart, Columbus expresses his hope to hear a better goodbye than Pig he used last time. That was a good callback to the first movie because I still love that line. It's like, that'll do, Pig. And he's like, that's the worst goodbye I've ever heard.
And it's from a movie.
Tallahassee at one point signs a presidential pardon for Wesley Snipes, who was convicted of tax evasion in 2010. Of course, Woody Harrelson starred second to Wesley Snipes in several films, Wildcats, White Men Can't Jump, and Money Train. I cracked up when I saw who he was signing that pardon for the first time I watched this in the theater. I'm like, that fits that he would sign for his buddy Wesley to get out of prison over this or whatever.
Oh, my God. I wonder, I wonder what Wesley Snipes thinks about it.
He probably thought it was funny. I feel like Wesley Snipes has a pretty good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Tallahassee, or let's see, what this was released as a celebration for the 10th anniversary of Zombieland.
Hell yeah.
According to special effects makeup head Tony Gardner, all the returning cast had script approval. This is where I was talking about Woody Harrelson had vomit approval. That chunkier spew that Zoe Deutsch had to endure in the movie was made out of vanilla pudding, a little honey, some almond milk, and chunks of granola for the bulk.
So at least it tastes good.
That wouldn't actually be bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. I would definitely, pretend to throw that up. I'd be hard. I'd be eating it, but, I could make that work.
Michael Cera was actually considered for the role of Flagstaff.
No, that would have been so good.
I think Thomas Middleditch was a very good second pick, but yeah, Michael Cera would have definitely played a good, because everybody always says that him and Jesse Eisenberg are they always say the Hollywood clones of each other or whatever.
Yeah.
The two of them always get compared. It's like,
Why didn't he do it? What a bitch.
He turned it down, but he played in the Barbie movie, so there you go. Michael Cera's got his priorities.
I still need to watch that movie. Hold on. I need to see what Michael Cera was doing in 2017 to 2018 that was so important that he couldn't be a part of it. No, it
would have been in 2019. Remember, they filmed the whole entire movie that in that same year.
He was in Arrested Development. No, that was just Arrested Development, period. Let me see. 2017, 2018, 2023. I'm not finding anything. I'm gonna be real honest with you. It's not looking good for him.
There's no real reason why he couldn't have played in this movie.
I think he was being a little bitch. I think he was you know what? No, because I don't want to be compared to him. And I hate him for that.
I don't like the comparisons online between the two of us. I think they're ridiculous.
That's messed up.
The idea for an enterprise that Madison speaks about in the movie about people, strangers driving, you to places was obviously a reference to Uber. The funny thing about that is Uber was founded in 2009. So in the Zombieland universe, it would have never existed because the zombie apocalypse would have happened right before Uber became a thing.
Oh, that's hella funny.
I love the movie too, where they all look at her and say, "That's a terrible idea."
Yeah.
When Tallahassee and Columbus visit the abandoned monitor, the start of the film, they encounter a zombie that was attacking her own reflection in a mirror. This was originally going to be another new zombie variant called the Jessica, but named after Jessica Simpson, similar to Homer Simpson zombie. But the writers decided to reduce the joke and cut it out of the movie.
Out of kindness for poor Jessica Simpson, who's had to. I mean, she's making fun of herself over that big time because she's got a commercial now where she's eating tuna and her daughter, she says something dumb and her daughter corrects her. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you always hope that her children are going to be smarter than her.
I mean, she's a billionaire. I think she's doing just fine.
Well, I mean, she's fine that way, but you don't want, her descendants to be like Idiocracy level, stupid. Madison would be like one of her descendants, in other words.
I mean, to be fair, tuna, chicken of the sea tuna, can pass for chicken.
No. The taste is tuna is so gross. Like, what are you even talking about?
Canned chicken is gross.
It's not the best, but it's not canned tuna level bad.
I think that they could pass. It wouldn't make me question which one is which. I can tell
you
the
don't
difference.
Want to open up a can of food and think somebody hasn't cleaned between their legs in 6 months.
Oh, God. Now you're just talking about smell.
Smell leads to taste, Urena. You just need to accept this.
COVID has proven to me that that is not 100% true.
You can eat anything when your taste is not around because you don't care anymore. Like, I mean, it's...
No. I'm talking about when my taste came back, but my smell didn't. That is a whole other thing I never thought existed.
I don't know if that's... I think your smell is there. It's just maybe lacking for certain things because you have to be able to smell something to get the taste. Like, your taste buds don't really function that well without the smell going along with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a thing that happened to me, and I think you're right because I can smell things now, but I can't smell things that would be considered... Well, that are definitely not good. Like, I can go into a porta potty and it doesn't smell.
Yeah, that just means that it destroyed part of your nose receptors.
It did. It got rid of the bad. I can't smell my cat box. I can't smell most things. Most bad things, excuse me.
You know, that's setting you up in a bad way because that's like those kids who have no pain tolerance or no pain receptors. It's like you would think that'd be a superpower, but it's really not because pain teaches you things that are going to hurt your body, and those kids have to be constantly monitored by their parents. That's like because they'll get past third degree burns and not realize they're even burning themselves because there's no pain there. And it's like, you know, and the nose is the same way. Your nose, we smell things that are bad because like they all have something that will kill us.
Oh yeah.
You know, in them. So you not being able to smell that stuff is a bad thing, like a really bad thing.
It is. It's a bad thing. My daughter is that superhuman that she'll get an infection and we don't know until it's bad, like hospital bad. So there's that one. But I will tell you one thing that I have. And this is from a movie, and I didn't think it was a real thing. So M&M's. M&M's taste like chemical to me. It tastes like pure chemical. And it probably is pure chemicals. But you know what M&M's do not? Brown M&M's. They taste, I can eat brown M&M's.
That's just racist.
It is racist. But there was a movie with Jennifer Lopez where I think it was The Wedding Planner or something, and she's eating and she's like, I guess Matthew McConaughey, who's in that movie, had told her the brown ones are, you know, you can eat the brown ones. They're more natural because there are chocolates already brown. Now, was I thinking that when I realized I could eat brown ones? No. Am I thinking that now? Absolutely. It's hilarious. But the brown ones are the only ones that don't taste like chemical to me.
I always thought it was funny, the people, I mean, it's terrible for them, the people that can eat cilantro because it tastes like soap.
I had that for a while. It's gone. I can eat cilantro again. But yes, it legitimately tastes like Dawn soap specifically.
Yeah, it's like a genetic change, whatever that results in that. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, well, that's a genetic thing, but COVID did fuck me up for that. So, and I feel I now understand what people say when they can't eat cilantro. I just kept eating it anyways because I knew I loved it. So I was like, well, I'm just going to keep trying and hopefully something changes. And it is. I'm okay now.
I was straight up going to turn vegan for the short amount of time that my smell and taste went away for COVID because meat without the taste is so gross because all you get is the
texture,
the texture, and it is awful without anything to go along with it. So I'm like, if I can't taste anything, and the reason I don't eat a lot of vegetables is because I don't like the taste of them, then I'm just going to eat those because they technically are better for me in certain ways that at least I'm getting vitamins and stuff from them. And I was on the verge. I was literally going to do it. And whenever I happened to I'm like, I'm going to try this. I went to Wendy's and started to eat a Baconator and I could taste it. And I'm like, fuck yeah. Meat's back on the table, boys.
I am back in action. Was there anything that you could taste?
I could taste nothing. I mean, it literally was gone for like 3 days. Oh. And that's whenever I was getting desperate. And then I could taste a little bit of the Baconator. And I'm like, my taste is coming back. I'm going to eat what I want to eat now, you know?
One thing I never lost taste for was tomato. I could taste tomato, and thankfully I like tomato, so it was pizza. I would eat lots of pizza because pepperoni is just salty and salt never went away. Salt and sugar. I could taste salt and sugar.
Yeah, I couldn't even taste salt and sugar. It was that bad for three days. Yeah.
And then, so it was V8 juice, pretty much anything tomato. Anything tomato I could have and I could taste it. And so a lot of pizza. I think I ate a lot of pizza during my COVID tasteless times. Anyways, where were we?
Getting back to the movie, we've already mentioned this, but the Hawking zombie, when Eisenberg calls her clever girl, that's clearly a reference to the Velociraptor scene in Jurassic Park. The list of double, triple, quadruple taps and so on makes a joke about whatever the nine upple word would be. This is non-upple, but yeah, whenever in the movie it gets up there and it's like whatever nine would be is what they actually put on screen, but it's apparently non-upple, so there you go. It doesn't even sound like a word to me, but you know. This is my favorite part of the movie in a weird way. Before the start of the movie in the Columbia Pictures Torch Lady logo, she comes to life and fights off two zombies with her torch.
Yeah.
I love that scene so much. I've mentioned this on here when I love when Universal does that with their like Earth logo. They change it. This is the best of all of them though, because they legit make, and they even like use like coloring to make the actress look like a painting, like the, you know, the logo, even while she's moving. And then she blends seamlessly back into the logo again when she's done.
Yeah, that was legit.
I love it. The zombie designs created for the original film were drawn from real life. References used included actual diseases such as hoof and mouth and skin conditions like bed sores. According to Tony Gardner, they had to be genuine horror to the experience. These afflictions represented an affecting, decaying situation where the skin and tissue appeared to be melting and leaking.
Ew.
The zombie wounds would be abscess, leaking pus with white and yellow mixture or colors mixed in. According to Tony, a sort of hot, sweaty, drippy mess.
I don't like it.
They are the grossest of the zombies in these movies. They were they even beat the gross blood zombies and bloody zombies in Dawn of the Dead remake
because
they have way more stuff on them, like all over the place. Columbus is reading Walking Dead issue 27, in which the characters find the town of Woodbury and a group of people that appear to be good, but where things appear to be good for the people, but it's far more sinister turn. That's how it relates to the movie. So they find Woodbury. They think it's like this idyllic place. And the movie Zombieland 2, Double Tap, they find Babylon, think it's like this, you know, heaven on earth, and then the zombies attack later. So that's the connection between the episode. So it's neat that they tied the issue into the actual, you know, movie itself. The blood and goo covering the zombies came in all types of colors, viscosities, and flavors. For blood, there was several combinations, including coffee, chocolate sauce, and Cairo syrup in different proportions. Each concoction would be for specific shots and effects. They applied the blood and slime in layers, with the darker stuff leaking from the nose, mouth, and ears, while the lighter stuff was used around the eyes to avoid a raccoon look. Working with a wardrobe team, Alterian artists smeared and smattered the blood and goo all over the zombies' clothing, create the illusion of body fluids leaking out everywhere, making them as gross as possible. Tony Gardner laughed that the performers had no way out. If you were going to be a zombie, you were getting covered in goo. So,
I mean, at least it's taste good goo, and it's not just like some random made up plastic shit.
That or like in a lot of the older movies when they would have them like cough up like vomit.
Yeah.
They would give them like canned corn and some other shit like pieces of like chunked chicken or tuna to make the meat part of it. Madison got way better treatment in this movie than anybody in the past.
Oh my God.
Abigail Breslin's name is for whatever reason after the main title of the movie, The Big Zombieland, Double Tap sign, while everybody else's, Woody's, Emma's, and Jesse's are all before. I don't know if that's like a sign where she was like in it less, but there you go. When getting out of the van to go to shoot Madison, Columbus says, "Time to teach Lenny about the rabbits." This is a reference to the plot point in Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men, where the character Lenny, who is not the brightest person ever, has a fixation on rabbits, and that's, you know, that's a reference that he's going to have to put him down, you know.
They should have had her look at the flowers.
To add depth so that they didn't just look like Halloween makeup, or didn't look like Halloween makeup was being used, several of the performers playing zombies had sections of their beards or hair shaved off, and then the wounds would then be applied to these open areas. That's dedication.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you go into a place and half your beard's like shaved off, and like you've got, and it's like, what's this? And it's like, I'm a zombie in a movie. It's fine, you know. The entire sequence introducing the Homer zombie, where he gets his tongue stuck on the freezing cold statue, and the lady he was chasing, taking the sword statue and chopping his head off, is a direct nod to the Simpsons episode, The Telltale Head, where Bart decapitates the statue of Jebediah Springfield.
Fucking Simpsons.
Also in that scene, if you notice, he wears a white shirt and yes. blue pants.
Oh, just he looks like just Homer. Like Homer. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And in the beginning of
the, I'm sorry, the lettering they used to describe the
donut.
Homer.
The donut was the thing.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the film, in one scene, Columbus and Tallahassee are standing in front of a vacant parking lot of a shopping mall. This is obviously a nod to, you know, Romero's Dawn of the Dead and its remake. Tallahassee sits down behind the presidential desk in the Oval Office and proclaims that he would have made a fine president. Woody Harrelson, in fact, played President Lyndon B. Johnson in the movie LBJ in 2016 before this came out.
Lil BJ.
No, he wasn't no Lil BJ. Lyndon B. Johnson was known for having a sizable thick boy, God. whipping it out in front of people in the Oval Office. That was his go-to move. If you were bad-mouthing him, he would unzip his pants, flop it down on the table, and say, "Will you have any questions?" That literally is what the man
that
did. I'm not even
so
joking.
So disgusting.
Madison's Love of Everything Pink may be a nod to Pretty in Pink, which was directed by Zoe Deutsch's father, Howard Deutsch.
Oh,
that's
wow.
That's a neat link.
Yeah.
Wichita's gun jams. This is possibly due to the fact that she was using a Beta C mag, which has been shown to be unreliable and inconsistent performance during testing, resulting in malfunction.
Wow.
That's a good nod to realism.
Yeah.
On that.
Should have used a Glock.
for the sequel, it wasn't the gun itself. It's just that magazine. It's like,
yeah.
It's supposed to hold 100 rounds, but she would have probably been better. There's other magazines out there. The 30 clip ones or the 30 round ones are way better. And there's P mags is what they're called. Very reliable if you're into that sort of thing. And
I like the
you
realism.
Live in America where you can actually own them. You know,
yeah, certain parts of America.
Maybe not California,
yeah.
But. For the sequel, 10 years later, Tony Gardner thought that he was going to make the zombies have give the zombies more desiccated look, like I said. But he said that they did the makeup test right off the bat, taking the zombies from the first film, projecting them out 10 years, imagining what all their juices would have, imagining that all their juices would have leaked out. The dried out looks would have highlighted the skin pulled back over the teeth, tighter bone structure underneath the taut skin and sun-dried flesh. They would have more reds and browns and more blistering thrown in, or as Tony called it, not quite barbecue chicken. That's a way to describe them.
Ugh.
Yet in the end, it was Ruben Fleischer who insisted on bringing back the juice. That's another way to call it. He said that he agreed that the dried out look made more logical sense, but he said that the Zombieland signature look was the juicy zombies.
Yeah.
So they wanted to stay true to that. He said that look consists of open wounds, discolored and caved in skin, plus mismatched eyes with brown and black fluids leaking from every hole, folks.
Ew. You know what, though? It works. These are infected humans that are eating, which you have discussed. So that part makes sense. And I think budget-wise, it probably is better because you can have more, I don't want to say human-looking zombies, but you can. You don't have to have gaunt-looking people because that can be hard to find.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point in The Walking Dead, whenever they were many years into the series, they had to have been hiring actors who are basically just, like, starved to death. Like,
yeah.
Because they were walking skeletons at that point, which makes sense. I mean, it makes and actually Greg Nicotero's makeup effects are amazing
mm-hmm.
throughout the entire series, but it really limits who you can hire. I mean,
exactly.
You can't, you know. according to the special effects of special effects makeup head, Tony Gardner. The film looked like a lot of fun from the start. The script was similar to the original. It was definitely one of those laugh out loud kind of reads. The dialogue is sprinkled in with what are sure to be new catchphrases, and the film delivers a bizarro on bizarro doppelgangers and an explosive finale.
Literally. Yep,
that's pretty much sums it up. They created the Alterian crew who did the makeup created a wide variety or wide array of zombies. The T-800s, the Homers, the cleaner looking, smarter zombies called the Hawkings. That's something else that I didn't notice. The Hawking is not as leaky as the rest of them. They know to clean themselves.
Ew, interesting.
And then the super fast, nearly impossible to see ninjas, which is the only weak point as far as the new ones, because I don't really feel like they utilize the ninjas quite that well. Okay. I mean, in the movie.
Yeah, not really. I mean, you get two scenes. Maybe.
Maybe. You know, just the intro and then that's, you know, it. I think they probably felt like the ninjas are so on the horror side of things, which the T-800s are too, that they kind of move away from the comedy. I mean, the Homers balance it out, but at the same time, like, the ninjas are I mean, they push it to the other direction on the horror side quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right, final thoughts on this movie. What do you give this one versus the first one?
It's another 5 for me. This one's another 5. I was watching this at work. I had no business watching this at work. It was a slow day, folks, and the managers weren't there. But I was laughing nonstop. I'm pretty sure my coworkers were over my bullshit.
They were probably like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, nonsense? What is she laughing at? And you fucking walk up, you see a fucking T-800, you know? Like, oh, she's sick.
You laugh at this? Yeah. This stuff has scared the shit out of me. I'm going to knock it down a little bit. It's a 4.5, and it's for the reasons I said. Like, I get Berkeley's supposed to be somebody you don't like, but he still annoys the piss out of me.
Yeah.
Babylon, everybody in Babylon annoys the piss out of me. They're a big plot hole in the movie. We don't have enough explanation for how they even got to the point where they could be as pacifistic as they are. Every other part of the movie, and even Madison, and it's not for looks. I mean, because I still think even 10 years on, Emma Stone's the hottest one of the bunch. Like, it's one of those things where I feel like she's so dumb, but she's so funny at the same time that I actually enjoyed her addition to the movie. Because the other characters get to play off of it. They're like, they can have their own problems, but they can all rally around the fact that they kind of dislike her for, you know, yeah, all the stupidity that she brings, you know.
It's funny because she's very, like, Emma Stone's character, you know, Wichita, you could be like, okay, she's a badass, I can understand how she survived, but, you know, Madison, you're like, how the fuck did you make it this far?
She's got just enough sense to be able to know, like, I mean, the freezer is not a bad idea because, honestly, it's actually pretty smart. If she can live in there and, you know, with electricity the way that it is, and they still have electricity there in D.C. because of the hydro plants or whatever they talk about.
Yeah.
It brings her body temperature down to where the zombies can't even recognize that she's a living person while she's inside of it.
Yeah.
So it's actually, it's super smart for somebody who's super dumb. Like, I mean, yeah, you know.
That, or, I mean, can they even get into the freezer?
Well, they probably can't but I mean, that's the whole other thing, because a lot of those, I mean, they probably make them, some of them, I think they make a lot of them now with the safety of being able to open them from the inside.
Yeah.
Some of the older ones you could only open from the outside, which means that it was scary as fuck if you got caught in there.
Yeah. And I wonder do they show them in the snow? No, because they're never in the snow in this, huh?
Third movie, that's what they should set it in, is in the snow.
Yeah, because I don't know that the zombies would survive in the snow, because most infections, I mean, not every infection, but most infections can't survive in sub temperatures, you know?
Well, even if they're not undead,
yeah,
and they're people, their bodies will start freezing in the snow. I mean, to the point they'll be breaking off limbs, you know what I'm saying? Like, because your body can get that cold that it'll just snap in two, you know? But the only thing you could argue against that's maybe if they have a constant fever, then that bumps their temperature up enough to where it won't happen.
Yeah.
That's pushing it, but maybe I'll give them that.
Fever. Yeah, I guess. Oy.
But yeah, I mean, like, I even like her addition to the movie. I think it's actually, I want to see her in the third movie. If they don't bring her back, I'm going to be upset. That might not be a popular opinion because I can see why people don't like her, but I think she is a good, like, you know, opposition to the cast, because I mean Rosario Dawson is basically, like we said, female Tallahassee. There's more to her, and they need to actually develop her quite a bit in the third movie to make her stand out more.
Yeah,
but they can't. But I think they can. I think they can give her enough development that she's her own person if she comes back for the third movie. But Madison is completely not. I mean, like, the group is not like her at all, so I think she's a good, like, you know, person to have in the mix.
Well, and they could show her, like, a little bit of growth where she's still the same personality, but she's learned how to use a gun or she's learned how to fight, you know?
Or maybe, like, it'd be hilarious if they somehow bring Babylon back into the third movie and she's the smartest of the people in Babylon. How funny would that be?
Oh, yeah, she's, like, the new leader.
Yeah, because, like, you know, she was the one that was like, we don't have guns, you know, like, you know, she doesn't care about the pacifist part of it. So, like, it would be hilarious if she's the one that's, like, you know, actually, you know, showing them how to get rid of zombies or something. That would be kind of interesting.
But... And then they could play Bikini Girls with machine guns and have, like, a little short snippet of girls in bikinis with machine guns.
I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah, although... I didn't think you would be.
But the feminists might be, because there is a new game that's coming out called Stellar Blade that's got like this. Now it's an Asian based character, so she's not like a thick girl or anything, but like she's you know, definitely like a, you know, really pretty and like showing off her body quite a bit, and all the you know liberal woke Hollywood video game magazines, online, you know, journals and all that, they're all like, this is just for the male gaze. We this game is awful. Why was something like this made? It just objectifies women. And it's like,
really? Because only men enjoy looking at women?
That's what their argument is. Yeah. Their argument is that women only want women who are dumpy or bad looking, because otherwise, and there was literally one of them that said this exactly. Women who watch or who play this game will see a unobtainable version of beauty and will kill themselves because of it. There's somebody literally said that. I'm not even kidding.
Die mad. There are literally gay and straight women alike that will look at a beautiful woman and either appreciate the body or find it sexually appealing, something. The chances of somebody looking at that and killing themselves is slim.
I would say
just it's the like same the woman people, that they're showing. No, I'm just kidding.
I would say, well, it's the people who they're who they want them to be, like the big dumpy or whatever. No. They might, you know. But I mean, what? And I'm not even talking about like a regular audience. I'm talking about like the game journalists who are so upset. They might unlie themselves for something that looks like that. But I mean, any rational person. I think I've heard from most women that they're like what you just said, that it's like they actually like attractive women in their games because it's an idealized avatar of your, you know, of your character.
I wish
whatever.
I looked like that. It's funny that a lot of guys I know actually play as female characters. Fucking pervs.
Well, if you're going to be playing a game for like 60 hours,
yeah,
what backside do you want to see if you're a guy? I mean,
it's so funny.
It's funny, too, because I was talking to somebody at work, and I was talking about this. No guy looks at, like, Kratos or, you know, any of the jacked male characters and thinks, that's unobtainable. This really makes me feel bad about themselves. Guys are completely opposite. They're actually, like, they look at that, and they're like, if I don't eat this cheeseburger and I go to the gym for, like, 10 minutes maybe,
yeah,
I could fucking look like Kratos. No way in hell, dude. But, you know, kudos for positive thinking, at least. I just got to shave my head and grow up my beard. Cool ass beard.
Yeah. I wanted to point out something. So, and I had sent you the photos, but while I was watching this, I took some screenshots of the stores that allowed their names to be used in this film that we didn't get from 2009. So I'm like, did they also take a cue from Dawn of the Dead and say, hey, we're going to get stores that maybe sponsor the film or we can use their likeness. I don't know. But the first one I caught was, hold on, let me see. Yeah, Forever 21. That's
which
popular.
Which is where Madison probably would have shopped.
Definitely. Yeah. Or H&M. So their H&M is just a, like, it, you know, consider Forever 21 like Walmart, and H&M would be like Target.
Okay.
Same stuff, different prices. let me see. Gap. They're very far off in the distance. They're not like immediately in focus, but you could see a picture of Tallahassee and Tallahassee and Columbus on their little segways going through the mall.
Don't they even make a comment, Paul Blart or something? Doesn't Madison call Tallahassee that?
I think
when
so.
When he shows up on the, I think so.
And then of course Garfield, but of course that was for the film because Flabby Tabby, which I would have to say that my favorite scene of the movie was in the credits with Bill Murray.
Where he's fighting off the zombies or whatever.
That shit was funny. And then there is a scene or a picture where it shows basically like where you can go to get to certain stores. So they show H&M again, Foot Locker and Express. So that was also apparently allowed to use. Old Navy is in the background. And yeah, that's a lot of fucking stores that were like, cool, we're in this mall and you can use us. And they didn't, either they didn't have to redo it, or I don't know how. I don't know how this was allowed.
They probably were like, this movie's going to make enough money. It's not going to hurt her. I mean, unlike the early 2000s where everybody was afraid, like, I don't want property associated with this. They were probably like, our properties are dying anyways. Let's just put them in this and get a little bit more, coverage.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, this is awesome.
You mentioned it, that scene with Bill Murray. I just remembered they're playing the Caddyshack song, I'm All Right,
from Kenny Loggins,
while he's killing the zombies. That's perfect.
I love it.
That is a perfect song choice.
That was such a funny scene. I was like, look at him.
I hope they keep, there's going to be a limit. If they keep doing it every 10 years, obviously we're going to, experience the passing of Bill Murray at some point. I mean, he is up there in age, but if they can bring him back for the third one, if he's still around, I hope to God that they do. Like, I don't even care if they explain how he's in the movie, just have him in it,
Yeah. Or like maybe have had him turn into a zombie. He could have not a T-800, but like, I don't know, something.
They don't even have to do that. If they were just if they could do this where they walk into a movie theater and they decide they're going to watch a movie and it's Garfield 3, Flabby Tabby, and it's Bill Murray making a scene for that and it wasn't even a thing, that would be awesome.
Yeah, Flabby Tabby. What the fuck, dude?
But I was going to say my rating for this, given everything that I've said about it, is still like a 4.5.
Yeah. Because
I can put this on immediately after the first movie and watch it all the way through again, just like the first movie.
Easily.
In fact, I pretty much do that now whenever I can, because I love the characters. That's the other thing about the characters. I don't want them to ever make the characters, the main characters of the movie, Tallahassee, Wichita, or Columbus. I don't want them to ever be, anything else around the movie could be dark, but the characters need to stay the same. Bright, like, we can do anything, hopeful characters, because they're why I like these movies. They can throw whatever other zombie stuff in there, but it's the main cast that sells these movies.
Yeah, and that's what my husband does. I had him download the first movie, and then we already had the second one, and I don't know how that works. And so he's watching it, and then he puts on the next one immediately. Now, I had fallen asleep at that time, which is why I watched it later at work, but this movie was so enjoyable. Because you had mentioned that it was definitely going to get a lower score than the first one, which it did for you, and that's fine. But it's still a hella good score, one.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't say it was going to be. I didn't want to, like, tease it. I was going to, like, but, yeah, it's got enough of a step down. It's like this, everything in the first movie is just like Shaun of the Dead. It's like pitch perfect. And it's like the second one, just there's a couple of knocks, but like it's still right up there.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think having heard that, I was like, oh, okay, well, this isn't, to me, I didn't think it was going to personally be as good. Apparently it was. I love the movie. I liked how the zombies were enhanced, which adds, because it could have been not scary, but it still had the fear in it.
I think that's how they improved it, because you know that these main characters, 10 years on, no regular zombie. I mean, we even talked about in the first movie, there's really not a whole lot of a threat to them except for Pacific Playland.
Yeah.
Because they're surrounded. In the second movie, it's kind of similar in the sense that there's not really a major threat until they get to Babylon, where they're completely surrounded. But the T-800s are enough of a mix that even our, you know, seasoned, you know, zombie slayers are like, this is fucked. Like, this might be a problem, you know?
Yeah. You know what we didn't discuss? We didn't discuss the zombie kill of the month or the years that they had.
I think it was of the year, didn't they? They didn't do decade, but they did year. Mm-hmm. They'll probably do decade in the next movie.
They definitely did year.
The Bella Hay zombie. That was pretty good.
Which one was that one?
That was the guy who was running down, like he had the combine, you know, tractor or whatever, and this zombie in front of him, and he ran it over, and then it bailed it and put it out behind him. Which, speaking of that, those combine, you know, harvesters, they don't actually bail their own hay. That's a separate machine.
Yes.
We'll overlook it for the fact that it was a neat little visual to see the zombie all bundled up as a bale of hay.
See, I thought that was month, and then the year was the Leaning Tower going down on the zombies.
Oh, that was another one in the movie. I don't know. I think that they were both year, but they changed it as it went along because there was new kills or whatever. The Leaning Tower of Pisa was an interesting one, yeah.
Oh, my God. And then he would be like, congratulations, so-and-so. Like, they knew their names. And it's like, cool, they know the names of the people who had the best zombie kills, but they don't have the name of the person who killed Bill Murray.
That's a running joke. I hope they bring it up in the third movie, too. It's like, do you know somebody fucking killed Bill Murray? And then, you know, Columbus just sitting there. And it'd be even better if he was like, he admits it in the third movie. He's like, yes, it was fucking me. But do you know that he snuck up on me in full zombie makeup? I'm not taking the blame for this.
I want to know who found out and how they found out and how they knew that he was still alive when he died. Because, as they call it, they murried him. Like, because he looked like a zombie. He had zombie makeup on.
It's just a joke in the universe. I mean, it'd be funny if they showed a small little scene where somebody like went up or was like in the mansion or came into the mansion after they left, you know, that second night, and they were like, somebody fucking killed Bill Murray, or they found his body down below because that's where he was thrown to.
Or surveillance footage.
Yes,
they find out it's Jesse Eisenberg.
There you go. Somebody found the surveillance footage when they went into Bill Murray's mansion, and then they saw that he was actually still alive and somebody killed him. Yeah,
and he's in big trouble when they find him.
But then if they bring it up and he admits to it in the third movie, then Nevada's going to have to, you know, she's going to have to backtrack, or there's going to be a drama, you know, there where because she swore she was going to find the person that did it and make them pay.
And Murray them, so, you know.
Yeah, Murray them.
That was funny. I'm sorry, what?
Suffice it to say, when the third movie does come out, and I almost guarantee that it will, I mean, because the main characters, there's no drama between them, so there's no reason why they won't come back.
Yeah.
And everybody has agreed that they want to do these. I can't wait.
Oh yeah.
I can't wait. I think that they will, you know, they'll take all this stuff and they'll actually work some of it in. Not everything that we said, and I'm not saying that we're, you know, but I think they worked in enough connections to the first movie that I think they'll realize some of the things from the second movie, and then they'll build upon them. So I think that it'll work.
Yeah. Before our show comes to an end, I would just like to say, if he's listening, happy birthday, Donnie G, next week. This episode will be out before that comes out, and we hope you like your shirt that is coming in today. You won't know this until you listen to the episode, so.
It might offend some people, so be prepared for that.
Please give your wife our apologies.
Next episode, we are discussing Scooby-Doo and Zombie Island, which they do have Return to Zombie Island, but we've not discussed reviewing both. We could if you want. I don't carry the weight because they're only like an hour and 16 minutes apiece. So, I mean, it's not like we couldn't do both of them. It's whatever you want to do. But we might, we still got to make sure that it happens, have a guest for that one.
Mm-hmm. Another Scooby, so.
I rewatched it last night, and I'll hold my opinion for it until we discuss it, but it's it's interesting the take that they have on the zombies in that movie.
Okay, I have not seen it yet. I gotta get my hubby to freaking, like, you bought me some extra time by pushing it out, so.
The thing that I find the oddest about it is the fact that, because I think these came later, you know how in the live action movies they had it set up to where the Scooby gang was separated because they, you know, various reasons, they just got tired of doing the Mystery Inc. thing and now they have to come together in the first live action movie to solve a new crime or whatever. They did that with this movie. Like, it starts out with the Scoobies solving like a regular ass case where, you know, it's a person in a mask. And then it shows like a year or so on, and Daphne is like got her own like television talk show, and she's talks about how they eventually stopped doing it because they all got tired of, or she in particular got tired of it never being a real supernatural threat, that it was always a person in a mask, and then they discover real supernatural shit in the cartoon. So.
Good Lord. I guess she learned.
Well, I mean, she's actually enjoying the hell out of it now. For Scooby and Shaggy, not so much.
Not so much, I bet not.
And I got to say this. I really miss the fact that Matthew Lillard was not the voice for Shaggy in this. When you hear it, you'll hear it. Matthew Lillard is my preferred, outside of Casey Kasem, my preferred Shaggy. I mean, you know. The guy did an okay job, but it's still not the same.
Yeah. Fuck, man.
All right, folks. See you next time for the Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit. My brain is flaming, I don't know which way to go.